Hey guys, this is Beth Golay. And before we get started with Marginalia, I just wanted to say that KMUW's podcast platform is made possible by High Touch Technologies, a software technology and business communications company that provides products, services, and support to all industries. High Touch brings the human touch to technology with a world-class team of industry experts. Learn more at hightouchtechnologies.com. And now, here's Marginalia.
This is Marginalia, a production of KMUW Wichita.
Marginalia, notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes which are incidental
or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
Is there such a thing as a Midwestern sensibility? J. Ryan Straddle thinks so, and both of his books do a great job of characterizing it. Published in 2015, Kitchens of the Great Midwest explored location and the rise of the foodie culture. And now his new book takes a deep dive into the world of craft beer. The Lager Queen of Minnesota features three strong women raised with stoicism and that Midwestern sensibility. I recently spoke with J. Ryan about his books, his strong female characters, his mother, and beer. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. This might seem like a silly question, but who is the Lager Queen of Minnesota?
Wow, I leave that somewhat subjective. I mean, there's one character who gets called the Lager Queen, but she never actually makes a lager.
That's what I was wondering.
It's probably Helen. Helen is the only person who has a legitimate stake of that claim.
But Edith was called the Lager Queen, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. So I love having that ambiguity.
Well, and I had written down here like Edith, Diana, Helen, or any of the grandmas. But I think everything you said was what I had taken from the book. So I'm glad that I didn't just miss something there. And so, you know, your first book, Kitchens of the Great Midwest, was published in 2015, and your new book is titled The Lager Queen of Minnesota. Both of your books, you know, if considered by title or cover alone, run the risk of being judged unfairly, in my opinion. But, you know, instead of being precious, I felt like they really captured the stoicism that I associate with the Midwest. Was that a conscious effort, or do you just, you know, call it like you see it?
Well, with each book, I wanted to create Midwestern characters that had that stoicism, but also were put in situations where that stoicism would be challenged. I like to see Midwesterners face conflict. Where I grew up in Minnesota, quite often you wouldn't see someone express emotions until they absolutely had to be expressed. Particularly things like pride, you know. Like, I grew up in a family where it was very, very rare for someone to toot their own horn. And if they did, you know, it was looked down upon. Yeah, people were not prideful. But, yeah, a mixture of a lot of the elements that I grew up with in Minnesota in terms of sadness, longing, people searching for their dreams, but also a lot of the warmth and coziness that those titles imply. And I wanted a mixture of all those things because the Midwest is a really complex place. And, you know, I live in Los Angeles right now. The coastal media doesn't always represent that. And I feel like as a native of Minnesota, I really want to tell stories that draw out the complexity of Minnesotans and people in the Midwest. And my books are an attempt to do that.
You know, I think there is more of a complexity, and I was just reading this as maybe it was more of a reflection of my family, my stoic German family, because I loved the description, and this is a quote, "This touchy-feely woman obviously wasn't raised here, or if she was, it was by people who weren't." And I felt like that kind of captured, you know, the feeling of the Midwest, or at least my family in the Midwest. And, you know, that line came from a section in the book after Edith had been recognized for making the third best pies in Minnesota. But then Edith's notoriety for pie baking kind of ended. And just like you said, you grew up in a family where it was frowned upon to be prideful. It seemed like she didn't seem to like the fuss when it was happening. And do you think she honestly didn't like the attention, or was that, you know, more of that Midwest upbringing coming through?
I think a lot of it was the Midwest upbringing, you know, and she didn't necessarily like this attention because, you know, she wasn't used to it. She was just doing something that she thought was right and something that she wanted to do, and she didn't see the point of making a big fuss about it. You know, when she gets poached by a Minneapolis bakery and ends up working for them and becomes kind of a cog in their machine, you know, I think she kind of loses her passion for baking. I mean, I think she felt like, I just want to be in my little corner of the world doing my thing my way. And the notoriety complicated that for her. And that would go on to be true. You know, it wasn't just a suspicion on her part or an inkling. It was a prophecy. Yeah.
I read that both of your books were written with one person in mind. Can you talk to me a little bit about your mom and how she influences your writing?
Oh, wow. She influences my writing a lot. Now, she passed away 15 years ago, but she's the reason I'm a writer. I grew up in a house full of books and with a love of reading and writing because of her. She'd always wanted to be a writer, and when I was a kid, she went back to college to complete her degree. She had dropped out when she was, you know, 19, but then went back when I was a little boy and would read her homework assignments to me as bedtime stories. And she was already around the house reading a lot, but now she was around the house reading and writing and getting such enjoyment out of it, such pride when she was published in her college's literary journal. And I was proud for her. I would take that literary journal prologue, it was called, the Literary Journal of University of Wisconsin River Falls, and I took it to show and tell at elementary school twice. Yeah, I was so proud of her. And, you know, she didn't live to write a book of her own, so in some way I feel like I'm doing that. I'm honoring her legacy, and I'm also trying my best to evoke her, like every day when I write, and write characters that she would like and stories that she would believe would be true, and also put her in my characters so she can still be in my life.
You know, this book was told through three perspectives, and they were three strong female perspectives.
Yeah.
And, you know, each of these three women, they each evolve and realize their individual passion for making beer. Talk to me about women brewmasters. Are there a lot of them out there, or did you have any inspiration when creating some of these characters as far as, you know, the fact that they were women and they wanted to make beer?
Yeah, there aren't enough women brewmasters out there, and that's one thing I noticed when researching this book. I only went to one brewery that had a female brewmaster, and that was Three Weavers Brewery out here in Inglewood, California. You know, part of writing for me is writing the world I want to exist. Yeah, and I want a world where there are more women brewmasters. So I wrote a book really focusing on them. However, I should add that at one point this book had 8 point of view characters and was 19 chapters, and so There were male characters and male point of view characters that were much larger at one point, but the book got edited down to its, you know, kind of its essence, which was these three characters. But that said, it was very intentional on my part to write about women brewmasters just because I want to see more of them in the world, and I wanted to create a book in which they were typical. I also felt like touring the country, meeting the brewmasters I did meet, that too many of them resembled me. Too many of them were bearded white dudes in their 30s and 40s. And I thought, that's kind of a boring story to tell. A lot of people could tell this story. Or I felt like that's less interesting to me to get in the head of that person. And also marrying that with my impulse to write about and for my mom makes a lot of my characters women. Because if I put my mom into a character, it sometimes feels weird if they're a male character. And so I feel like, okay, I'm sitting down to write these people that reflect my values and my interest in the history of the Midwest I grew up in. And a lot of those characters turn out to be women, so it seemed very natural to marry that with my interest in writing about a woman brewmaster.
You mentioned, you know, traveling and going to some of these breweries, and I understand you went to, like, how many breweries in 3 years? Was it 30?
Oh, boy, somewhere between 35 and 40.
Do you run?
Around 3 dozen. Yeah.
Do you do fitness? Because I would have to like add some sort of running regimen if I were going to drink a lot of beer.
Yeah. A few months ago, I went in for a physical and my doctor said, well, you're as heavy as you've ever been. Is there anything you can come back on? Like, what's changed in your diet since the last time I saw you? And I said, well, I've been drinking a lot more beer. He said, can you cut that down? And I said, well, probably not. I'm about to go on a book tour that is going to feature beer in a pretty strong way. I'm certainly going to be exposed to a lot of beer, and you know, it would be pretty rude for me to turn it down if it's offered.
That's funny. And this popped into my mind just now, and when we were talking about female or women brewmasters, It is brewmaster, right? It wouldn't be like a brewmistress. Like the post, even if it's a female postmaster, it's not a postmistress, is what I understand. So that's accurate, right? Brewmaster?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, master, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Okay.
Yeah, until this conversation, I hadn't thought of the word master as gendered, but you're absolutely right. It is. And, you know, that said, it's the dominant nomenclature for the task. So it would seem like a diminution to gender it female just because the person happens to be female, right? You know? Yeah. So let's just take control of master. Let's ungender master.
Okay. Done. So Lager Queen features a colorful cast of characters. Was there a favorite to flesh out?
Oh, wow. Boy. Yeah. Oh, I probably had the most fun writing Edith. Edith was always a delight to come back to, but there were some scenes with Diana that I considered to be my favorite scenes to write in the book, like the scene after prom where they're trying to get drunk because they think that's what they should do is find some alcohol, and they can't find any, and they can't find any alcohol other than a bottle of Midori. And I thought, like, this really takes me back. This is a fun thing to think about and write about. Teenagers who are trying to be wild and crazy, and it's not really in their nature, but they think they should be because they're teenagers. But they've been the smart kids, they've been the hardworking kids. You know, a little like that movie Booksmart that just came out about these smart women who just, you know, spent their whole high school career studying really hard and never really had a good time. That kind of impulse in one scene. I had a riot writing that scene, but basically the whole book was such a pleasure to write. To you know, merely have an excuse to create characters that wanted to learn more about beer, you know, because I did. I didn't know that much about beer when I started writing this book, so I created characters that would find out things about beer for me. I set them on a course where each of them would unravel some part of beer history or some part of beer manufacture that I could then write about in a way that wouldn't seem as didactic if I was just explaining it in its own chapter, like putting Diana through the process of learning how to brew an IPA, I thought, well, this is developing her character. This isn't just me explaining to the reader how an IPA is made. This is someone learning how to do it and feeling them grow as they learn. I thought that was important.
Did you find any of your characters frustrating?
Oh, boy. Oh, sure, at times. At times, I knew they would frustrate me because they wouldn't always make the right decision based on their personality. Like, the rift between Helen and Edith is totally preventable. But each of them, you know, they are who they are, and they were going to react how they were going to react to that situation. I don't want to give too much away there, but, yeah, no, I mean, it's funny when you create certain characters and you know how they're going to behave given a certain conflict. You know, it frustrates you when you know that they're not going to do the right thing. Yeah, it's like, oh, dang. But in terms of being stuck on a character, not really. There weren't characters that presented a challenge to me in terms of how to develop them. I mean, those characters didn't make the book or were greatly diminished. Yeah, like I mentioned, these three characters are the strongest of a batch of characters I created for this novel 4 years ago. And so I was always pretty confident with these three.
It's my understanding that you don't care for wheat beer.
Yeah, I just have an allergy to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's too bad because it's some of the most interesting beer out there. When I've been able to taste it, I go, oh, wow, this is cool. Especially the Belgian beers, you know, Saisons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I find them so interesting. And certainly with the wheat beer here in the U.S., there's so many different styles being brewed now and adjuncts being put into them, fruit, you know, different grains, different vegetables, for lack of a better term. I mean, just plants, you know, just, yeah, they become the vessel for really great innovation, and it's a shame I can't really drink them. Can't drink them comfortably.
There's a sentence in the book, and this is a quote, "Diana was now a person who judged people by what kind of beer they had in their fridge." And it reminded me of myself a little bit, except I judge people by the books that they have on their shelves. Do you do either of those?
I sure try not to, you know, because we were all, none of us, no matter how elevated our taste, we didn't start there. You know, maybe this is a person that just hasn't had really great beer yet, you know. When I look at a fridge that's all Coors Light, I go, well, you know, everyone has their own use for the beer in their lives. I mean, not everyone is into beer food pairings, you know? Yeah, or is consciously, constantly trying to seek out the most inventive beer in the world. So, yeah, when I come across a fridge like that, I'll be happy to talk to them about beer and see if maybe there's a bridge to a more interesting realm of beer they just haven't explored yet. You know, because it's out there, and I think a lot of craft brewers think about that drinker and think about, well, you know, if they come in here, what do I have that they can try that will be within the realm of their experience that won't, like, scare them off, you know, and say, like, can't stand that stuff, you know, those hazy IPAs and so on. You know, what can we do, you know, to be welcoming to them and give them something that might be kind of a halfway point? I've certainly spoken with some brewers who have felt that way, and we'll create something like a Kolsch or a cream ale or a blonde ale or something that's kind of close to a lager and might appeal to lager drinkers.
What is your what's your current favorite beer?
Oh, wow, what a question. Oh, boy, that's hard. No, I don't really have a favorite. I mean, I've been drinking more hazy IPAs this summer. I've been into that style for a while, but the last few years I've become a fan of Citra hops. And, yeah, just about any IPA that has that in them. But I like stouts, too. I mean, I like a pretty wide variety of beer. If I could have one beer in my fridge, you know, if I could have one beer in front of me right now, I'd probably pick something really obvious, like Pliny the Younger or something, you know, which I think is delicious beer and worth the hype. But, boy, yeah. You know, yeah, that's a really tough call. Yeah, there's a lot of great stuff out there. We've never been so lucky to have such a wide variety of good choices and different choices in the world of beer. And, yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer.
So were you reading anything while you were writing this that, you know, influenced the book at all?
Oh, big time. Yeah, a book that I read while writing this that certainly influenced the way I wrote character development and scenes was The Wanderers by Meg Howry. It's a different setting. It's about a Mars mission, about three people on a Mars mission, but it's not a science fiction book at all. It's a people book. It's a book about the characters and their families, and I just loved it. I also read a lot of Alice Munro, and that's one of those writers that maybe people read in college and not since, but I went back and delved into her work again, and it's just gorgeous. I mean, her settings are rural Ontario. Her people are usually, you know, working class, rural people, and she handles them so sensitively and so smartly, and it can often be funny, too. Like, really love her work. And, yeah, those two writers, Meg Howry and Alice Munro, were big influences.
Do you get reaction about these books? Do the people from the Midwest and the people from the coastal areas, do you get similar reactions, different reactions? How do people take your book?
That's a great question. I'm so glad you asked, and I think only a Midwesterner would ask this question, too. Because on the coast, I get asked about things that the Midwest takes for granted that baffle the people on the coast. Like, are there actually people like Edith? Or did you just make that up? I will get that question. You know, I got that kind of question when touring for Kitchens of the Great Midwest. Oh, wow, you know, are there people that actually, like, make these peanut butter bars? Yeah, are there people who have these conversations? And this is a conversation I witnessed countless times growing up in my mom's house, where an article of clothing would be complimented one woman to another, and the woman wearing the article of clothing that was complimented would respond by saying, oh, I got it on sale. Yeah, and the people in Boston just didn't get that, you know? It's like, people really talk like that, you know? Like, yeah. Yeah.
That was J. Ryan Straddle, author of the book, The Lager Queen of Minnesota, published by Pamela Dorman Books, Viking. Thanks for joining us for Marginalia. Discover more episodes at KMUW.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like Marginalia, we would love ratings and reviews. Marginalia is produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Lou Ann Stevens and Haley Krausen, and I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.